We first met, Roland, in Cafe Theatre in 1975.
1975 in Leamington Spa.
In Leamington Spa, which is my hometown and where you were living for some reason.
My adopted town, yes. I joined Cafe Theatre, who had grown out of the students' drama activities in Warwick University.
I still do Warwick University sometimes. Still go a couple of times a year.
Excellent, yes.
It's very nice. I use long words like therefore and however just to impress them.
We opened the Arts Centre, if you remember.
That's right, yes. In the studio.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
And then we went up to Newcastle, and then we went to Durham, and then we went to all stations after that.
Absolutely.
Now, you'd been with Cafe Theatre for a couple of shows before then, hadn't you?
One show before that.
I
did two shows with them, of which you joined for the second one, I think.
Yes, that's right. It was Smiling Through, was it the one
Smiling
before?
Smiling Through, yes, that's right.
And before that, you were with, was it Cambridge Automatic Punchline Company?
Automatic Punchline Company and the Cambridge University Light Entertainment Society.
So you're obviously an ex-student of Cambridge. Which college, if I can ask?
Clare College.
Clare College, and your surname is Clare. So it's not what you know, it's who you know.
I've never noticed that.
What? No one's ever pointed that out to you before. No, it's like the old
it's
Mr. Smoke
new one on me,
line,
yes.
Isn't it? Cambridge Automatic Punchline Company had one or two people who went on to do a bit well, didn't they?
Oh, Andy Hamilton.
As a Radio 4, Channel 4.
Funniest man on radio. And Paul Mayhew Archer.
Who's a producer.
Radio 4 producer, yeah.
And then you stopped doing all that and you became a teacher.
That's right.
Why?
Well, you possibly remember the poverty we lived in Cafe Theatre.
I do.
You know,
can we just say for the listeners, we had absolutely no money whatsoever.
That's a fair assessment of the thing.
We
yeah.
shared shoes and slept in them.
But in fact, Cafe Theatre, I mean, I didn't really stop because of that. Cafe Theatre broke up. Different people, you know, it hadn't quite fulfilled its early promise and people went in different directions. And I had given up a place to do teacher training in order to do Cafe Theatre when they asked me to join. I already had a place at college, which I cancelled it. And then when Cafe Theatre folded, I went back to the same place and said, what's the chance of coming here again? Really, to be perfectly honest, I didn't have anything else lined up. And the idea of being a student for another year was quite appetising.
Now, I'd thought you would have been a music teacher, but you're not. You're an English teacher, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, having an English degree...
It does, yes.
Slightly helps.
Mind you, I've got one. I'm a storyteller, so it's done me no good. All teachers do different things on the day off. You actually run a website for quite a well-known pop...
I don't say pop group.
Well-known music combo malad. Who would they be?
I can't really agree with the idea of a day off, you know. I mean...
Okay.
But yes, I know what you mean. Procol Harum. From the age of 14, that was my favourite band.
What was it that appealed to you about Procol Harum?
My father was working as a music critic. And when my younger brother was born, he was still being given pairs of tickets for concerts, classical concerts at the Colston Hall in Bristol. And so he took me along, I think probably to ease the babysitting business, and because I was a good boy and I would sit quietly and so on. So I heard symphonies and piano concertos and organ recitals and great, great stuff. So I grew up thinking that was the proper music. And pop music, when I began to hear that, I thought was the silly music, you know.
Improper music.
And it was about love and weedy things, you know, and it hadn't got much to it. I thought it was all over too quickly. But my mother greatly liked popular music, and she was a fan of Glenn Miller and Joe Loss Orchestra and Elvis and such like.
Yeah.
And she started buying pop records, for want of a better word, in about 1966. And I sort of hardened my heart to these things till eventually they just got so good. That it was difficult to be indifferent. But, I mean, certainly when the Beatles came through Taunton, where I was living, when they were making Hard Day's Night, and almost everybody in my class went down to the station to see them coming through, and lots of them met the Beatles and got their autographs, and it never crossed my mind to go.
And do you regret that now?
Well, it seems that it would be quite pleasant to have John Lennon's autograph in the drawer, wouldn't it?
It would be very pleasant. It'd be an investment.
Yes, it would be an investment as well. But anyway, so Procol Harum came along, and suddenly here was a band that seemed to straddle the two worlds, really. It was undoubtedly popular music, though. But they didn't sing about weedy things, as I then thought. They sang about strange and poetic and very funny and lugubrious and downbeat and bluesy things. And yet the music was constructed with a kind of authority and a kind of an awareness of dynamic range and lots of rise and fall of tempo, never sort of played to a click track, always very organic breathing
music.
And
so that made it all right to like them because they were using
sounds weak
intricate
now, doesn't it?
Structures. It doesn't sound weak
it's
at
not
all
because it was intricate, it just because it was, I think I'll just say it again, it was authoritative. It sounded like people who knew what they were doing. Mm. And it was only when I got to know the band years later, I realised that that isn't really the case, that they knew what they were doing. They were clever people with wide open ears.
Yeah.
And they were feeling their way, but just with astonishing good luck and dexterity from the very beginning.
Now, as well as knowing the band personally, Procol Harum, you're also associated, and in fact, you're, some say, the mastermind behind the Palers Project, which is a group of enthusiasts who play their own versions of Procol Harum songs.
Mad people.
Mad people. Yeah. Well, hang on, be careful how you say that, because I've done a bit.
Well, some of them are marvellously sane.
Yes, unfortunately.
But not very many.
Neither thee nor I qualify.
What it's about is I think you kindly said I run the website. I don't really run it. I partly run it with a Norwegian bloke. Mm. And only, of course, in the days of the internet, could you have a partnership spanning the North Sea,
yeah,
doing something so intensely collaborative. Because this website is updated every day. A new feature is added to it every day.
Yes.
It's been happening for 10 years. When we started getting to know people online, a lot of people were writing and saying, you know, I play the piano, the organ, the guitar, the drums, whatever it was. And I started saying, it would be lovely to get these people together and play some of this music, recreate it. And we, you know, it came about that we'd done that 5 times in, you know, twice in Britain, I think, in Norway, in Denmark, and in Hollywood, in the USA. We've got...
Whose club was it you were in there?
B.B. King's club.
B.B. Yeah. King.
He didn't show up.
Did he not?
No, we played a B.B. King tune. That was great fun, but a phone rang in the audience. We thought it might be him, so we had to stop that. But we were working live with these people, and I got to know a lot of really pretty good musicians all over the place, all over the world, really. And so just began eventually to email them and say, would you like to do not a copy of the songs as we had been doing live, because that's an easy way of rehearsing. You know,
yes,
you rehearse with the record before you meet the people.
Yes.
Not a copy of the songs, but, you know, a different arrangement. Hear the song in a different way. Mm. Allow it to become a calypso or a reggae tune or a country tune, or, you know, ham it up or you know, mellow it down or do with it whatever you want. Yeah. And to my astonishment, there was quickly enough material for a double CD. And we've now done 3 double CDs.
Yeah.
And the biggest fans of them seem to like it a lot.
And the fans of them actually include members of Procol Harum themselves, don't they?
It's gratifying that they don't mind hearing their songs done very differently.
Yeah.
Or at least certainly Gary Brooker and Keith Reid, who are the main writers, have expressed that opinion. They like to hear how elastic their material is.
Yeah.
And how it responds to different sort of visions and different treatments.
You were talking about the joys of the internet. I mean, one of the things that amazes me about this project is the fact that people record their tracks, they send them whizzing over the internet to another part of the world, and somebody adds something else, and
yes,
somebody adds something else. I mean, I was fortunate enough to be involved in a couple of them. I still think it's incredible that I recorded it and sent it as an MP3 to you, and then you made it sound all right and so on. And I just found that quite staggering.
Well, that particular track was a parody of Basement Tapes era Dylan.
Oh, yes.
Which we all...
I can only do Bob Dylan. Yeah. I can't do anybody else.
Stuff we all first heard on crummy bootlegs.
Mm.
So the fact that we realised it from an MP3,
yes,
was perfectly excusable.
Because we actually used that for the final thing,
yes,
didn't we?
And when I added my bits, I deliberately did it in one take and didn't check out the chords, so it would sound more like the band fumbling away behind Dylan, not knowing quite where the changes were coming.
Do Procol Harum still tour?
Absolutely, certainly.
Yeah.
I think I saw them 6 times in 2006.
And how many of the original lineup are still there?
Well, the only person from 1967 is the singer and pianist Gary Brooker, who writes most of the material.
Mr. Gary Brooker,
MBE.
MBE.
Yeah, yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah.
For services to music, no doubt.
Actually, I think the citation is for services to charity.
But tell me a bit about that.
Well, he's got various charitable bands, of which the most well known is something called No Stiletto Shoes, which includes absolutely the cream of crack players. Frank Mead on saxophone, Dave Bronze,
yes,
fantastic bass player, Andy Fairweather Lowe, and from time to time a guitarist, Eric Clapton, I think he's called.
And the cream, as you say, the cream of musicians.
And so they turn out and they do every year a Christmas fundraiser for local, I mean, he lives in Surrey, and they do Surrey charities.
Yes.
And he's done a great deal of charity work. He raised a lot of money through that and given people a lot of fun.
Mm.
And I suspect that that was what was at the back of Her Majesty's mind when she decided to make that award.
She's good like that, isn't she?
Oh, she loves...
She's very, very good like that. Well, you say you're already starting to collect music for the fourth compilation.
All your listeners, John, should go to www.paylorsproject.com. And yes, we've got one tonight. Some nice French geezers wrote in and said, we like your stuff. We like the Paylors Project. And can we do another track for you?
So, if you want me to choose, because I'm going to play something. Mm-hmm. When I get back to Wolverhampton, I've enjoyed your splendid hospitality down here, for which I'm most grateful. If you could choose one track for me to play, because I'm only going to play Conquistador again if you don't decide.
Yes, well, I mean, I think that Conquistador, and that's the one that Procol themselves have applauded so much. That really is the one. That's the hit.
Yes, I mean, one of the things you mentioned, Conquistador, Conquistador, which is it? Tell me which it is.
Well, this is done by lovely Latin American singers, well, Spanish American singers, Cindy Harding and Libby Harding. Their version of it is called Conquistador.
Okay.
And half of it is sung in Spanish.
Yes.
Especially translated for the project. Mm. One I like, I shouldn't say I like it because I do play a lot on it, but Jeff Whitehorn, who's Procol Harum's guitarist, contributed a guitar solo to something called Butterfly Boys.
So let's get that right. The guitarist from Procol Harum actually came and played on a tribute to Procol Harum.
Well, it's not so much a tribute as a badly screwed up and skewed version of one of their probably lesser known, really rocky songs.
Mm.
But I just was hearing it differently in my head and wanted a guitarist on it. So I just rang Jeff up and said, if I were to ask you to play the guitar solo on this, what would you say? And would you do it? And he said, it would be impolite to refuse, dear boy, or something like that. So, but he didn't come down. I mean, I sent the thing over to him, and he just zapped it on there and sent it back by return.
Gosh.
That's how these gentlemen operate.
I don't suppose you've ever shared the stage with any of these musicians, have you, Procol Harum?
Well, in the summer in Denmark, we did. It was very, very interesting. We were playing one of their songs, Wailing Stories, and they all got up and sang at the end. In fact, the bass player, Matt Pegg, got up and played bass with us as well. And in the same evening, because we did two nights of the Paylors band, we backed Gary Brooker when he was... Perhaps I should explain. He used to play before Procol Harum in an R&B band called the Paramounts.
Mm.
And the Paramounts had their only reunion in 40 years, this time last year, December 2005. And they made an informal recording of that for their own, you know, video recording for their own benefit. But it turned out so nice that they put it out as a DVD, which I did the artwork and so on.
Mm.
And so we launched that, the official launch of it, if you like. Gary got up and sang Poison Ivy, which was the Lieber Stoller song.
Yes.
Which was the closest thing to a British hit that the Paramounts had, backed by the two webmasters, myself and Jens from Norway.
Yes.
And rather strangely, our two sons, both playing guitar.
Oh, wow.
An excellent gentleman from South Carolina called Gary Shepherd playing the piano.
Mm.
And our good friend Jeremy Gillian from San Francisco, who joined in on organ. So we did play with the Commander, as he's known.
How does it feel playing with the Commander?
Strangely natural and not a kind of big trip or anything for anybody.
Yeah.
He's a nice guy. He sort of respects the amateur musicians. He knows, you know, what our capabilities are and seems to... He didn't need persuading to do it. He seemed to love it. But, I mean, you know, I think everybody's well aware that however good amateurs are, if they're meeting on this sort of once every 18 months basis and rehearsing for a couple of days, there's no danger of them coming anywhere near the level of the professional band. But good enough to listen to at a party, which is the point of it. The idea of it is for fun. It's not... perhaps I should explain also, it's not a tribute band in the sense of all the Yoo-Hoo and Punk Floyd or whatever, you know, these who dress up like and try to do the moves off. We're not interested in that at all. It's purely to realise some, you know, really good music, quite neglected music, and have the fun of, you know, treading in the steps of great people who have made it, and then taking it somewhere else as well. That's what we're about.
You're also a great fan of a novelist called Russell Hoban, who I have to be honest, I've not heard of. Tell me about Russell Hoban.
Russell Hoban is the American novelist, born in 1920-something, resident in London since the late 60s, who writes, some people would say magical realism, but I just think he writes Hoban stuff. His most famous novel, Ridley Walker, won loads and loads of prizes. And in a funny way, there's a sort of Procol Harum parallel. This is a man who's got one huge achievement in people's eyes, that like a whiter shade of pale.
Yes.
And then people say, did he do anything else? And absolutely, he's written, I mean, apart from perhaps 100 children's books, he's got lots of so-called adult titles. He's an inimitable force in fiction.
Yes.
And I was on the Russell Hoban Yahoo group, and there was a few people there, and we were talking about how Russ was coming up to his 80th birthday. And having had a bit of success with the Procol Harum conventions, you know, booking a venue and having people coming in from all over the world, I was instrumental in setting up a similar event, but obviously of a literary sort, in London in February 2005. And Russell came to that and gave us a reading and sat with us, and we had a very peculiar savage puppet show in a bookshop. Mm. And we walked around strange woodyards and were given pieces of lime by characters who really exist in the novels. We went to the Science Museum and saw some of the exhibits which had stimulated different characters in some of the novels.
So it's a sort of a bit like sort of Bloomsday, sort of James Joyce sort of world.
Well, yes, it's difficult to make it continuous enough because London's so much bigger than Dublin.
Yeah, yes.
But we also went, we also hired a bus and we went down to Canterbury.
Mm.
Actually, we didn't hire a bus, we took a bus down to Canterbury.
Did they know?
Which is where the climax of Ridley Walker takes place. Mm. And we got into the crypt of Canterbury Cathedral with the curator there, and we had a fantastic reading down there done by a bloke who looks after the Ridley Walker website, who's a man called Eli Bishop, who comes from San Francisco.
That's an amazing name, isn't it? Eli Bishop.
It's the right name for the novel when you read it as well.
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, what I suppose struck me is that you're, and I've always thought this, I think, ever since I met you in 1975, is that you are an enthusiast, you're a fan, and you enjoy what you do.
Wouldn't the world be dull if there weren't enthusiasts?
I think the world would be incredibly dull if there weren't. Yes. I think the world would be incredibly dull. And I would be underemployed if there weren't nutters. So I'm absolutely delighted. Thank you very much indeed for talking to me. And also thank you for your splendid hospitality.
Well, it's all Linda's hospitality.
And thank you, Linda. Linda, I must say, is fast asleep on the sofa, as she should be. Worn out making fish curry and listening to... some of my endless stories. Roland, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.